My guest is writer Hanif Qureshi. He wrote the screenplay for the film My Beautiful Laundrette. It was originally produced for Channel 4 television in England, but it was released theatrically and became a surprise hit in America. The movie is about a young man of Pakistani descent coming of age in London. It's about fascists and punks, racial and economic oppression, violence, crime, sex and drugs, but it's a comedy. Qureshi's new film, Sammy and Rosie Get Laid, opens Friday in New York. As you can guess, the title has created a lot of controversy, and we'll talk about that in a moment. The film is about a Pakistani politician who returns to London where he was educated, but when he gets there, it's not the London he remembers. There is rioting, and the streets are literally on fire. Both of Qureshi's screenplays were directed by Stephen Frears, who also directed Prick Up Your Ears, the acclaimed film about playwright Joe Wharton. Hanif Qureshi was born in a suburb of London to a Pakistani father and an English mother. I spoke with him earlier today from the NPR Bureau in New York. I told him that I think Americans have come to turn to British films for high culture and refinement, like the world we see on Masterpiece Theatre, but the London of his films is very different.
Yeah, that's very interesting because a lot of English cinema is associated with a kind of view of Britain that seems to me to be rather outdated. I'm thinking of films like, say, Passage to India or Room with a View or Maurice or the Raj films, I think, which you've had in the United States, or Brideshead Revisited. These are all films that show Britain at a certain stage of her great glory, and they're about rich people generally ruling over poor people, usually in India. Our low-budget films are quickly made. They're, I suppose, punk films. They're made about kids on the street. I suppose they're like punk records you might make in a garage, kids getting together. They're made very quickly and cheaply. And our idea, I suppose, is to show the lives of Britain today, the lives of young people in Britain today. There's been a number of these films, like My Beautiful Laundrette, Letter to Brezhnev, Wish You Were Here, Personal Services, Another Country, Rita Sue and Bob too, and now Sammy and Rosie Get Laid. So these new films are an attempt, financed by television, are an attempt to show a new Britain, a Britain from the bottom, as it were.
Are you showing the London that you feel you know best?
Yeah, that's the London of the streets I know, and it's a London that's not usually represented on film. It's about, often, these films are about people who are normally excluded from the cinema. For example, the lives of Asian people, or the lives of gay people, or the lives in Sammy and Rosie, partly, of lesbian people. One of the things that's happened in Britain in the last 20 years is that there's been a whole wave of immigrants who've come from Pakistan, from India, from the West Indies. And these people's lives haven't been portrayed in the cinema yet, and their lives seem to me to be very interesting, very rich, full of conflict and drama, and full of interesting relationships between colonialism and Britain. So that's the aim of our cinema.
You know, I'm almost surprised that your first film, My Beautiful Laundrette, got funded. So many movies are package deals now, and the producers try to see if this movie will have a wide demographic appeal. So you go and make a movie about a Pakistani in England who is gay and runs a laundry. It's not exactly wide demographic appeal written all over that.
You wouldn't have thought so before it was made.
Exactly, right.
What you have to do when you're making films, I suppose, is be adventurous. If I'd gone to a big producer and said, look, I'm making a film about a gay Pakistani who runs a laundrette, give me $2 million, they'd never have given us the money. But these films, all of these low-budget films I've described, are financed by Channel 4, financed by television. So they're made very cheaply, but also they're made not to make a profit. We're not trying to hit the jackpot with this film. We're not trying to, with any of our films. We're not trying to make Gandhi. We're trying to make films that cover their costs, make a little bit of money. But mostly we're interested in making good films, in telling the stories that we want to tell. But we're not really interested in pulling in $15 million. We know we can't do that, but we hope there's room in the market for our films.
You know, even the title of your new film is controversial. The title is Sammy and Rosie Get Laid. Now, the last I heard, the Motion Picture Association of America had refused to register the title because of the last word of the title. What's the status now? Is it still unregistered in the MPAA?
Well, thank God that you've had the courage to mention the title, the full title of the film on the radio. We never anticipated there'd be such a fuss about the title of this film. We didn't think the words "get laid" would cause such a, you know, people to fall into a fury and start foaming at the mouth. And the New York Times and the LA Times and so on won't publish it in their advertising. Although yesterday they published it in their advertising, but didn't publish it in their advertising, but published it in their editorial. So it's very weird. And it's upset us a lot because I think it's so stupid.
So is it still unregistered?
It's still unregistered, yes. I don't know how that affects this particular film. But the film, the title is supposed to indicate that the film is ironic. It's full of jokes. It's a comedy. It's light. And there's a sort of rebelliousness about the title we like. I think maybe they should just call it Sammy and Rosie Get.
Why didn't you change the name, though, when you realized that there was going to be trouble advertising it and that it was going to be a big controversy?
Because I would never have called the film Sammy and Rosie. I would have called it something altogether different if we hadn't been able to use the Get Laid. So it's come a bit late, all this, really.
How would you describe the theme of that new movie?
It's about a young couple, Sammy and Rosie, who live in South London, who are joined in South London by the father of Sammy, who comes from a third world country. He arrives in Britain on the night when riots break out in Brixton in South London. These riots are based on the actual shooting of a black woman called Cherry Gross by the police in Brixton. And the film is about the riots that follow it and the arrival of Rafi, played by Shashi Kapoor, in Britain on the night of the riots. He's a character who was in Britain at Oxford during the 50s and sees Britain as a very civilized, very tolerant, kind of Brideshead revisited place. And this film is his journey through South London, seeing the way it's changed, the kind of racial tensions there are, the kind of problems there are, and what life is like on the street.
Yeah, he says, before returning to England, he says, "Before I die, I must know my beloved London again. For me, it's the center of civilization, tolerant, intelligent, and completely out of control now, I hear."
Absolutely, and certainly out of control when he arrives, when he finds the first thing he sees are the streets on fire. In fact, he sends a postcard to his fondest relative saying, "Streets on fire, wish you were here."
In your first film, My Beautiful Laundrette, the Pakistani uncle describes England as this damn country that we hate and love.
Yes.
Does that sum up your feelings about England?
Not only my own feelings, but also the feelings of my father and some of my relatives that came to Britain from India and Pakistan in the late 40s and 50s, came to Britain to make money, to succeed, to find a place, to be educated and so on. But of course, Britain is such a difficult place to settle into. There's so much racism, so much prejudice. And also a lot of Indians and Pakistanis, as they get older, they miss the old country, they miss their family, they miss the relative, they miss the extended family, the idea of being surrounded by all your cousins, aunts, children, and so on. People in England live in rather, as they do in America generally, in families of two and three people. So it's a country where you can flourish, where you can make money, as the uncle does in The Laundrette. Yet at the same time, it's a country in which there are many problems and in which you never really feel at home. It's a country where, on the whole, white people in Britain don't like black people or Indian people or Pakistani people.
Now, your father was Pakistani, your mother is white. And I would presume that your father lived pretty comfortably in Pakistan if he was able to come to London for an education. Was he able to maintain that status in England?
No, he wasn't himself, though some other members of my family, like the uncle of mine who has the Laundrette, have been very successful. I mean, it is a country, I suppose, though to a lesser extent than the United States, where you can make money and succeed. One of the things you can't do in a country like Pakistan, really, it's more of a feudal country than a capitalist country, is to really succeed and make money. So one of the reasons why the Indians and Pakistanis came to Britain was to make money, to break away from their villages, from their families, from the feudal background, and to succeed. But of course that success has involved them completely changing their lives. I mean, it's been hard also on their children. You come to a country, you find that your children are different to you. They don't follow the same religion. They go out with boys and girls. They start taking drugs. They don't live in the way they would have lived in India or Pakistan. So all this has led to innumerable conflicts and problems and drama, which is one of my subjects as a writer.
So he wasn't able to keep up the status or level of lifestyle that he was accustomed to in Pakistan?
Not in the same way.
Did you grow up in a racially mixed neighborhood?
I grew up in an all-white neighborhood. I was the only little brown face in my neighborhood and the only little brown face in my school.
There was pretty strong anti-Pakistani sentiments in England in the 1960s, and I think there were even marches against Pakistani immigration.
Yeah, one of the themes of The Laundrette between, if you remember, the two boys, Johnny and Omar, is
right.
That Omar joined a right-wing organization and would take part in marches through South London, and Omar describes seeing him on these marches. These marches did take place in Britain, mostly influenced by a politician called Enoch Powell, who was very right-wing, very racist, who was at one time in the Tory cabinet. And The Launderette is partly to do with that theme of someone like me growing up with white kids who then often joined right-wing organizations, and how hard that was for me.
So that happened to you. You had friends who joined right-wing organizations and who marched in anti-immigration marches and who became very racist.
Yeah, well, after school they used to go out beating up Pakistanis. They go out, it was called paki bashing. It was a kind of, you go to a dance, you get drunk, and you go out and beat up Pakistanis. Something I myself never took part in.
Well, so were you able to keep these friends? Did you want to keep these friends once they
Well, I kind of, my ambition was always to sort of escape from the suburbs, really, and to be a writer and to lead the leisurely life I now lead.
Is this a working-class suburb we're talking about, or a middle-class suburb?
It's lower middle-class, I suppose.
You've written in an autobiographical piece that you tried to deny your Pakistani self. Would you explain that?
Well, I suppose for a long time I thought of it as a kind of an affliction, this terrible thing that had happened to me, that had been done to me by other people. I didn't really see it as a social problem. I didn't see it as it is, really. It's a problem of white people who are racist, and it's some kind of psychosis that they have to work out for themselves. I saw it as being my own problem and didn't see it as being something I had in common with anybody else. It was a very personal thing. One of the things that gave me courage and hope in the 60s, actually, were organizations like the Black Panthers in the United States, people like James Baldwin, Angela Davis, and so on. And I turned to them, really, in my reading for support and encouragement.
When did you start writing, and when did you become interested in art?
I suppose in my teens, really. Yeah, I was very interested in writers like Baldwin. It was also a way of expressing something, a kind of complex anger in yourself, or a desire to work out what's happening to you. Writing, as you probably know, is a way of making strong feelings into weaker ones. It's a way of capturing, expressing, and making sense of your own anger or loss or unhappiness or whatever.
You know, in your movies, there are so many punks and Rastafarians, people of different ethnic backgrounds, gays, straights, and a lot of the people who populate your movies are people who are really outside of the mainstream, or at least on the fringes of it. And I wonder if when you moved to London, you became involved in people who lived on the fringe of the mainstream, and if you felt more comfortable there.
Well, these are all... Yeah, someone once said to me, you write about all these people, the kind of immoral, terrible people. And I thought, well, these are all my friends, really. These are the people I hang out with. I'm obviously in with the wrong crowd. But the people that I know and like are generally people who stand up to things, who are odd, who are individual, who don't conform, who are defiant and rebellious. Because that seems to me to be, these are people who are lively, who are awake, who don't go along with the general stream. That's what I like in life.
You know,
I come from the suburbs where everybody dresses the same, talks the same, does the same job. I hate all that. It's dead. I couldn't bear it. And so I've always been drawn towards the freakish, the individual, the defiant, and the sexually odd, especially.
Well, you know what I'm guessing? I'm wondering if in circles like that where people are really, odd and outside of the mainstream, if they're more accepting of each other, or if there's still a certain amount of racism and sexism even in that fringe culture.
Oh, there is. A lot of Pakistanis and Indians are very condescending of each other. Pakistanis. The Indians were great fans of My Beautiful Laundrette because they said, oh, we always knew Pakistanis were just like that, you know.
Oh,
Pakistani men were always kissing each other. We knew that. You didn't have to tell us. So there is an enormous amount of prejudice. It's part of human nature, I suppose.
My guest is Hanif Qureshi. He's a screenwriter whose movies include My Beautiful Laundrette and a new film that opens this week titled Sammy and Rosie Get Laid. We're going to talk some more after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Screenwriter Hanif Qureshi is my guest. He's joining us from the NPR Bureau in New York. You went to Pakistan, I guess. What were you, in your 20s or so?
Yeah, in my late 20s, in the early 80s, yeah.
Did it fit your image, which you had, the image that you developed living in London?
It was a very, very complicated place to visit for me because it's a place where I had an enormous number of relatives, friends, cousins, aunts, uncles, and so on, who I'm deeply fond of and who love me as well. So going there, I had an enormously warm welcome, and I felt part of the place. I wasn't just a tourist wandering around, lying on the beach. I felt part of the society. On the other hand, it is a right-wing Islamic dictatorship in which the attitudes to the poor, to the unemployed, to women, and so on, are attitudes that I abhor. It's not a liberal society in the least. There are no decent films, you can't get any books, the newspapers are full of figures on steel production. It's a society that doesn't look at itself in the way that Western society does attempt to look at itself, examine itself up to a point. So I felt a lot of very strong emotional feelings towards the place, which were warm, and yet at the same time I felt deeply alienated politically because I couldn't understand why there were so many soldiers carrying guns on the street.
It must have been interesting, though, for you to be in a place where Pakistanis weren't a minority group.
Well, they certainly weren't a minority, no. I felt, as an Englishman, in a minority, and I felt my own views to be rather bizarre and unique in such a place.
Right. Was there much of an art scene there? Did being a writer give you any status while you were there?
No, it didn't. It had the opposite effect, actually. When I told people, when I was with my family, and I told strangers and friends of the family that I was a writer, my family would try and explain that this didn't mean what they thought. You know, they thought being a writer was being a kind of bum, somebody who really was unemployed and liked to stay at home and listen to records, which is, of course, true.
You wrote My Beautiful Laundrette while you were in Pakistan, is that right?
Yes, I did. The people in Pakistan, really, who have status are people like doctors, people in the army, lawyers, some university professors and so on. But on the whole, the arts are not considered to be a respectable or responsible thing to be doing. It's rather like, I suppose, France in the 19th century.
In your new movie, Sammy and Rosie Get Laid, one of the main characters is a Pakistani politician, a powerful man who comes to America to visit family. Is this character, this powerful politician with blood on his hands, is this character based on anyone you know?
He's not really. I mean, I know he's a man that comes to Britain to see what it's like after 30 years. He's a man with a very interesting, complicated past, someone who, in fact, has got, as you say, blood on his hands, someone who's tortured someone else. It isn't that he's based on anyone specific. It's only that I'm interested in the idea of torture and what that means and how you live your life if you do it, what kind of people do this, how ubiquitous it is in the world, and how you may have to come to terms with it yourself if you found that somebody close to you was doing it. After all, there are many people in the world who do torture other people. I'm interested in what their wives or their children or their husbands or their family think of that. So that was that's the kind of central dilemma of the film.
When you started writing, were you ever afraid that you'd have to find a way to write about subjects that were considered mainstream and popular for the time? Did you always know that you could write from your own heart, from your own experiences?
Well, I've only ever done that. I'm not interested in being a professional screenwriter. I don't really consider myself to be a screenwriter. I'm a journalist, I write a lot of fiction, I write plays, and so on. I work in a number of areas. Screenwriting is only one area that I'm interested in. I don't want to be a screenwriter, I just write screenplays because there are these stories I want to tell, and I also want to reach a large audience, which is the thing you can do with screenplays that you can't do if you have a story in The New Yorker, say. It's obviously a different kind of audience. So we use screenplays, we use the cinema, Stephen Frears and I, who directs my films, as a way of telling our stories and getting people sexually excited and reaching a large audience.
You know, you had said earlier that one of the things that interests you was sexuality. I forget exactly the way you put it, but I had read somewhere that when you were getting started as a writer to make money before you could actually sell your own novels or screenplays, you were writing pornographic films or pornographic books.
I didn't write pornographic films. I used to write the stories that went between the pictures, to my enormous shame. And to the embarrassment of my friends, it was something I did for a while under the name of Antonia French, actually.
Did it succeed in giving you enough money to write your own
Yeah, story? But one of the things, yes, it did. I got money to do other things I wanted to do, but it made me realise that the most important thing to me was my writing, and if you prostitute that, it is the worst thing you can do.
Maybe there was a time when you thought you'd never get out, that you'd be stuck doing hack work or worse.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about being a writer is that you never know what's going to happen, whether you are going to be successful or not. You just have to carry on, be dedicated, believe in what you're doing and stick at it to the end of your life, really. In the end, all I want to do is to write sentences that are beautiful, sentences that appeal to me, sentences that say something and are structurally gorgeous, as it were.
Both of your films have been directed by Stephen Frears, who also directed Prick Up Your Ears. How did you hook up with him?
Well, when I wrote My Beautiful Laundrette, when it was commissioned by Channel 4, they said, this is great, we want to make this film, and so on. So I went round to Stephen's house with the script and dropped it through his letterbox and said, this is this film I've written, Channel 4 want to make it, do you want to direct it? So he called me up and said, come over, and I went over, and he said, this is good. He said, I'll make this. He said, but only on one condition. And I said, what? He said, only on the condition that you make this, that we make this film for television. It never plays in the cinema.
Why didn't he want it to be in the cinema?
He was afraid of hybrids. He was afraid of making a film that was neither a television film nor a cinema film. And he thought that some of the films that had been made, like The Plowman's Lunch or whatever, for the cinema, hadn't fully succeeded as cinema films. How wrong could you be? I remember that story when I was nominated for an Oscar.
Well, did you tell him no?
Well, I agree with him. I said, okay, fine, whatever you like. I was so glad to get the film made at all. It was only later when it was shown at the Edinburgh Film Festival that we got it into the cinema. And it ran and ran for 18 months in London, actually.
Why did you choose him as the person you wanted to direct your films?
Because he's incredibly skillful as a cinema maker, but also as a filmmaker. But also he's got a great sense of humour. What we're interested in doing is writing very serious films about complicated subjects, with complex, rounded characters who are neither good nor bad, set in very difficult moral positions, yet stories that are full of humour, full of life, full of humour, full of vigour, full of music, and are really lively. It's that combination that interests both of us.
You know, it's interesting that you are doing comedies, because usually films about racial and sexual and economic oppression tend to be very serious movies making serious points, but your films make those points through comedy. It's not slapstick. It's not a yuck a minute kind of comedy, but they are comedies.
Absolutely. I mean, the first time I ever heard someone laugh during a play of mine, that was it. I was turned on. I wanted that to happen all the time, because when people are laughing, I realize that people are listening as well.
Do you like to be on the set when your movies are getting shot?
Yeah, I'm on the set all the time. Stephen and I make these films together. They are collaborations. I mean, I write them and he directs them, but I'm always on the set. I'm involved in the casting. I'm involved in the cutting of the film. It's because we work well together. I say to him, or he says, what's happening in this scene? I say, so-and-so is happening in this scene. Or he says, oh, why don't you rewrite the end? Or I say, why don't you put the camera over there? So we do collaborate in every way. It's very unusual, in fact, in films for that to happen. In American films, generally, if you're the writer, you're lucky to get on the set at all. I can't understand that, because you can do so much writing and rewriting on the set.
You do a lot of rewriting on the set?
Yeah, I'd sit in the corner and I'd write a scene and hand out the pages to the actors, and then we'd shoot it straight away. You get a lot of ideas from the actors, what's going on between them, the kind of improvisations they're doing, the kind of jokes they tell in the canteen. It's very useful for a writer to be on a set. And it's very inspiring as well, because you've got like 10 minutes to write something and you write it in 10 minutes. It's just as good as if it had taken you 2 hours to do.
You know, one thing I really wanted to mention about My Beautiful Laundrette, two of the characters in there have a gay relationship with each other. And it happens midway through the movie, and they're kind of surprised by it. I think the audience is surprised by it. But it happens so naturally, and it's really not a big deal in the movie at all. It's like the love subplot of the movie.
Yeah,
nothing's really made of the fact that they are two gay men.
Yeah, I mean,
right? It's just done.
Yeah, it's about time that happened. I mean, being gay is not such a big deal as it used to be. I mean, so many people are gay and they don't talk about it, or you know, it's just taken for granted, as heterosexual relationships are taken for granted. I wanted to do that in the film. I didn't want all the characters going around saying, "Oh God, I'm gay. What do I do? How do I tell my father?" You know. Where do I get my condoms? I wanted to write a film in which this was as natural as any other form of sexuality, which it is, of course.
Did you talk to the actors about that kind of ease that you wanted in the movie?
I didn't, actually. We never talked about it. They always sort of took it for granted, really. They thought it's part of the characters they were playing. We hardly ever mentioned it. Because it's not a gay film in that sense, or the theme of the film isn't to do with being gay, it's to do with class, it's to do with being Asian in Britain. Being gay was their sexuality, but it wasn't made into some big theme, thank God.
Your new movie is about to open in America. Have you been to many American movie theaters?
Oh, yes, I have. Yeah, I go off and on. Yeah, I love American films.
Do American movie theaters seem different to you than English ones?
Well, in Los Angeles, you go into a movie theater and everyone's eating all the time. They're eating hamburgers, chips, drinking Coca-Cola, and they talk through the films, which is something that doesn't happen in England.
What do you do on an opening night? Are you going to be nervous about the opening?
Well, what's good, I used to write for the theatre, so I really know what opening nights are like. I mean, in the theatre, opening nights are terrifying, because usually on an opening night, the sets do fall down, the actors do forget their lines, or the costumes, or they can't get the doors shut, they've forgotten their costumes and so on. What's good about a movie is that you know that nothing can go wrong. What's also interesting about a movie is that if you sit through a film, every audience is different, and the film seems different with a different audience. In Toronto, for example, where I saw the film last time, the film was almost seen as a comedy, and people were roaring with laughter. They were really into it. Other audiences, after the shooting of the black woman at the beginning of the film, really shut up and are quiet throughout the film. So I'm interested to see what a New York audience will make of this film.
Will you be at a movie theatre on opening night this Friday?
I may be. You may find me there, or you may find me in a bar.
If you go to
probably in a bar.
If you go to a theatre, do you know what kind you'd pick? I guess you might not have a big choice in New York.
Absolutely. I don't know yet.
What are your new projects that you're working on?
Well, I've sort of retired now. I've done enough. I've had enough. I'm fed up with writing. There's so much trouble about the title of this film. I can't be bothered to make any more films or to write any more films. But funnily enough, whenever I decide to retire, when I think that's it, I've had enough, I get a new idea. So I do have a new idea for a film, which was going to be called, rather innocuously, I'm afraid, Hot to Trot, which I'm going to write at the moment, which will probably be about an Asian girl who goes to a third world country for the first time.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your life and your work. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Hanif Qureshi. He's a screenwriter, novelist, and playwright. His movies are My Beautiful Laundrette and a new movie titled Sammy and Rosie Get Laid, which is scheduled to open this Friday in America. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.